Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm Natalie Boyer, the debt and project finance reporter at Infralogic. Joining us today is Craig Furnett, the Senior Vice President in Brookfield's Renewable Power and Transition Group. Thank you, Craig, for joining us on the podcast.
Hi, Natalie. Thanks for having me today.
Today, we'll be examining the current status of the carbon capture, utilization, and storage, the CCUS or CCS market. But before we jump in, Craig, do you mind giving us a bit of your background at Brookfield and how carbon capture fits into your focus?
I've been with Brookfield for about 9 years or so now. Probably spent at least the first half of that working within more of a conventional energy context. So looking at investments across our energy infrastructure funds in the oil and gas space, primarily from like a midstream focus lens in that. Then moved over to sit within our renewable energy and transition group, where I'm currently based now, and have been looking at our investments within the CCUS sector there, as well as been involved in the ongoing asset management of those investments. And one of the things that we'll probably get into during a discussion here is it turns out that there's actually a fair bit of overlap between the oil and gas sector and the CCUS sector in a lot of good ways in terms of things like the technology and some of the projects themselves. So having that background in the industry and in the sector has been very valuable as we look to deploy investments in this space in the energy transition sector.
While CCUS is new for some in the market, the technology, as you mentioned, used for it is not. Could you talk a little bit more about the history of the technology used in CCUS and how it's been proven?
If you take a look back at some of these technologies, a lot of them trace their roots to natural gas processing. And so when those systems were being built out, broadly speaking, like in, say, the 1960s and 70s, even within North America, they needed to come up with systems to basically purify the natural gas that was coming out of the reservoirs from the subsurface formations before it makes its way into the end use. And part of that purification and upgrading process involved the removal of CO2, and still does, of course, today. And this was effectively done to the level that was required from a technical perspective. There's certain levels of CO2 that you just can't exceed when you're thinking about both industrial as well as end use consumer applications for natural gas. But there wasn't until recently, and I guess we can talk about some of the regulatory and policy developments, but there wasn't a reason for the owners and operators of this equipment to capture or to upgrade the gas beyond what was required for those technical specifications. And so the remaining CO2 could have been left in the gas stream or would have simply been vented into the atmosphere rather than captured and sequestered. So broadly as a whole, the sector benefits from these decades of proven technology that have been used in the natural gas processing sector and has really been able to leverage off of that in order to prove out and help scale up some of the new projects that are being developed.
And going off of that, it would be fair to say that CCS, CCUS has faced challenges and ups and downs over the years. You mentioned the federal incentives, and while the sector mainly came through the One Big Beautiful Bill Act this past summer looking pretty good with the 45Q credits remaining available until 2033, the general instability from the bill didn't really help the nascent sector, but that kind of applies to a lot of renewables in the group. Could you talk about some of the current challenges in the space, regulatory and not?
This sector as a whole, and we're talking about U.S. carbon capture sequestration or carbon capture and utilization projects, were one of the few that generally was kept intact through sort of the IRA to the OBBBA, and then it was actually enhanced through several specific outcomes there, such as a boost effectively to the value of the Section 45Q credit for carbon capture and utilization projects. And then really just getting clarity in terms of the ability to develop projects to receive these credits. So when that clarity came out post that process, I think it was definitely a positive sign for the industry in the U.S. I guess on that theme, to talk about the U.S. and then happy to chat more broadly beyond that, from a regulatory perspective, there are certain programs we call the Class 6 permitting process. That's a process that's administered by the EPA and effectively is designed to ensure that there's been appropriate technical work done prior to the issuance of a sequestration license for a CO2 injection well. And it is a very thorough program and technical review that takes place by the EPA or by other designated state agencies. But it has had the net effect of, in some cases, taking several years to get these permits from initiation to completion. And so what that has done relative to some of the other jurisdictions in the world that are advancing these projects is it has had the net effect of slowing it down. But what we're seeing is that some of the first movers who really had vision to proceed with these projects several years ago and get into the queue early, like for example, our partners at Carbon TerraVault, they're now able to reap the benefit of that by getting some of their permits coming through relatively recently, actually. So that's been encouraging to see as that permit bottleneck starts to get reduced.
You mentioned other jurisdictions, Canada, Europe. Could you take us through some brief comparisons with the US and what that looks like?
There's many, many dimensions to this, but in Canada, looking particularly at the sequestration element component of it, it's generally a simplified process compared to what I described with that Class 6 permitting process. I saw a stat that there's already 30 or so sequestration well licenses in Alberta, which is the main hydrocarbon producing province in Canada. And that timeline to get those has been really a fraction of the Class 6 program. And really just pointing that out because I think with enough resourcing and policy thought, these timelines can be accelerated and thought through if that's really of a priority to do that. But it is an interesting experience to think about how Canada has been able to accelerate the permitting, at least of the sequestration part of the projects. I would say broadly in Europe, what we've seen there has been a very focused government program that has been holistic across both things like the regulatory aspects of these projects. So thinking of things like the permitting, and that includes not only things like offshore sequestration licenses, but the ability to convert existing platforms to work with these projects, as well as pipeline licenses. But that has also gone into thinking through different commercial incentives and programs that can be used to incentivize the development of these projects. And so that effort there has been very holistic, and I would say has been looked at across the sector. Canada has done that to a certain extent as well, and we can touch on some of those incentives that have been put in place there. And then the US at a high level, it's been led through things like the 45Q tax credits.
The sector has moved forward over the past year. We had our first utility scale project financing that took place last spring when Tallgrass Energy, a Blackstone company, closed over $1 billion for its carbon capture project. But in terms of investment, like you said, there's been a lot of equity investments over the past few years in CCS, and Brookfield itself was kind of at the forefront of that. Could you talk about Brookfield's strategy with CCS and how that's evolved over the years?
As we think about strategy for the CCS sector, that's within even a broader bucket that we would call the sustainable solutions theme. And so what that is it's an allocation within the energy transition sector for companies, technologies can decarbonize entire sectors of the economy and that are effectively required in order to reach net zero. So these can be things like CCS, where if you think about certain industrial sectors, like say ethanol, ammonia, cement production, et cetera, there's just inherent chemical processes that are required when you make those products that release CO2 from them. And so even if you fully decarbonize, say, like the scope 2 emissions by procuring renewable energy into those companies, they're still going to emit CO2 from the nature of what they're doing. And so CCS as a technology then is highly complementary in order to get those industries to net zero. And also quite relevant as well for other applications, like say industrial applications that have high temperature heat requirements and so on, where there could be natural gas involved as well in those processes. So broadly speaking, that sets sort of the background in terms of how we think about that sector and how it fits in with net zero. And then in addition to that, there's the lens of looking at that from an infrastructure point of view as an investment. And when we look at it, it's really important to get the full exposure to all the tailwinds in these sectors and the high growth that we're starting to see play out in this sector, but at the same time, structuring an investment such that it has strong downside protection as well. And so getting that balance and that asymmetric exposure to the upside potential, having the downside protection, has really been one of the key lenses to look through as we thought about investing into the CCS sector.
And you have made several investments, including, I know you mentioned earlier, Carbon TerraVault with California Resources Corporation, and in the same year with Entropy, a subsidiary of Canadian oil and gas producer Advantage Energy. Could you talk about these investments? Some of them had some milestones last year and recently. Could you give us a perspective on those?
We're delighted with both investments that we've made. Carbon TerraVault is a JV that, as you mentioned, we formed with California Resources Corporation. it really has benefited from the fact that CRC effectively was almost 3 or 4 years ago made a decision to start putting resourcing towards the development of a sequestration strategy and being able to really get a head start in terms of that permitting process. So if you recall, I mentioned the Class 6 permitting process, the timelines for it. They saw that, and so they really proactively realized the benefit and the economic advantages from having pore space and sequestration capacity in key areas that are adjacent to industrial emitters. And so we've been able to benefit from that head start that they have. They actually received one of the first, if not the first, final EPA Class 6 permits in the U.S. through the modern permitting process that the EPA created there. And as a result of that, they're actually going to be starting injection for the first CCS project in California in the next couple months. And that's at a project that they call 35R at their Elk Hills field in the Bakersfield area. So very exciting milestone for them. The sequestration wells have been drilled and they're going ahead with some of the infrastructure works necessary to connect the emission source to the reservoir.
And I know you've also had Entropy in Canada. Could you talk about that investment over the past years?
Our investment in Entropy, as you mentioned, they're a Canadian-based CCS developer. What was compelling about this investment was the fact that, similar to Carbon TerraVault, they very much were first movers in the sector. And we had looked at many companies in the space, and at the time, there were a lot that had, say, engineering studies or had conceptual designs. There were very few that had actually gone ahead and actually put steel in the ground. And that's exactly what the Entropy team had done. And so they had probably a 3 or so year head start on their peer group in terms of being able to actually operate a commercial scale CCS project on a natural gas plant. And so having that head start and all the operational and technical data that you get out of it, and what allows you to feed that back into the designs of future phases of your projects and continue to iterate and optimize on that to achieve better performance of the capture technology. We were very excited given the progress that they had made. And there's been now a couple of major milestones within that business. One of those is the fact that this summer they're going to be starting up, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, if you've seen any other stats, but it should be like the world's largest CCS project from post-combustion emissions from natural gas. That's going to be starting up this summer at the Glacier Gas Processing Plant in Northern Alberta. And then what's really exciting is that alongside that, we made the decision to approve, and we'll also be starting up at the same time, a 15 megawatt simple cycle gas power turbine that itself is going to be connected to the CCS system. And so that, again, is, to our understanding, going to be the world's first commercial scale baseload clean gas power with CCS. So two very exciting milestones that are going to be happening within that business. You see fairly significant potential to scale up the power technology. And so lots more to come on that front as well.
You mentioned it earlier when we're talking about size and progression, that the M&A market could be active this year, given projects' lifetime and investment. I was just curious what you think we're going to see in 2026 on the M&A side.
So obviously always challenging to provide a precise forecast on that. But what I can say from observing the sector now for several years is that we have definitely seen an increasing amount of projects that are progressing in their maturity. So it could either be projects that are nearing or have now reached COD. It could be a number of projects that are now advancing sort of past the FID gate and looking for, say, scaling capital or a different cost of capital to come in and help get to that COD point. But either way, I think what we can say from looking at this globally now is that there are a number of large-scale projects that are moving forward. And so definitely think there'll be significant opportunities for investors that want to participate in the sector going forward.
We talked earlier about federal incentives and regulations in terms of certain tax credits, et cetera. But I wanted to switch it over to financial incentives and how does one make money off of CCS?
This is important and one of the key things that we would think of through an investment lens. It really depends on the jurisdiction. So Canada is probably a really interesting one. It's a bit of a hybrid between the US and the European models, but Canada has a carbon tax system that, generally speaking, the intent is to provide sort of an increasing or decreasing, depending on how you want to look at it, but a changing benchmark over time that emitters have to comply with. And the idea is that there's some allowances up front, and over time, emitters have to step down their emissions with the objective of providing for a pathway to net zero within the Paris Accord. If the emitters are not able to meet that pathway, and again, this is a generalization, they have some choices. They can purchase carbon credits from one of the various markets that are available, and it's typically done at a province level within Canada. Or they have other options, such as, say, deploying CCS technology, which could actually significantly reduce the emissions of their plants that are emitting in the first. So that carbon tax framework is effectively one of the key economic drivers in Canada for enabling and progressing the development of CCS projects. And in addition to that, there's been a couple other sort of key developments in Canada. One has been the concept of the CCUS ITC, or investment tax credit. So this is effectively a tax credit that is paid as a function of the capital cost of eligible CCUS equipment. So that incentive stacks and goes hand in glove with the carbon tax framework. The last component to think about through Canada is that the Canadian federal government has gone ahead and created some ability to actually act effectively as a purchaser and guarantor of long-term offtakes for carbon credits through entities like the Canada Growth Fund, which was created by the federal government. So really what that lets the government do then is act as the offtaker and for carbon credit contracts. And so what they can then do is provide for price certainty, as well as long-term contracts that are inherently highly financeable by the sector. And when we think about entropy, obviously, developing projects in Canada, it's really a combination of those three incentives being all in place that has allowed us to move forward and take FID on some of those large-scale projects that I talked about.
And could you take us through what that looks like on the U.S. side?
So the U.S. side, as you mentioned, it has the Section 45Q CCUS PTC production tax credit. And the way that that works is it's a 12-year term. The headline price is $85 a ton, and there's indexing as well for inflation on top of that. That is the primary incentive that's available in the U.S. to, I would say, monetize or drive forward investment into the CCUS sector. But that said, there are some additional incentive programs available depending on which state certain projects are in or which markets they may sell to. So that includes things such as the 45Z credits, which can potentially be received for a defined period of time for, say, ethanol projects that are reducing their CI. It can also include things like the LCFS program into California for eligible fuels that are imported into that state.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about some hot button topics. Of course, data centers and the increased power demand and how CCS fits into that. We've seen CCS come up several times in headlines with large hyperscalers that are, at least for now, retaining some of their carbon reduction strategies. An example of this is Google's corporate agreement with Broadwing Energy for its Illinois data center in October of last year. Could you talk us through how CCUS is fitting into this new status quo and how this might be helping the sector or not?
That announcement that you mentioned with Google was, I think, a very timely one for the sector. And in addition to that project, referenced the creation of a environmental attribute certificate standard. The intent there basically to enable the tracking of the carbon intensity of a natural gas power project that has CCS on it to reduce its CI, which obviously we think is a really critical link in the value chain and getting the ability for the market to be able to efficiently purchase and design contracts to buy this type of power. At a high level, I think there's now a significantly increased need for electricity. And the way that we see it is that this is going to be solved through a number of complementary pathways to generate those electrons. And all clean energy moving forward is a good thing type outcome. When we think about the different types of technologies that are available, some of the quickest time to power and cheapest forms of energy still come in the renewable landscape. But things such as natural gas paired with carbon capture, it does present a compelling opportunity in the sense that it has a relatively quick time to market, and it has the attributes to have clean and baseload energy, which is important to off-takers. So the ability to take the CCS technology and pair it with something that has the potential to get long-term corporate offtake from hyperscalers, as well as other companies looking for that clean power, we think it's a very exciting and a very compelling opportunity for the CCS sector that's available right now.
And building off of that, something we are really focusing on, as a lot of people are talking about it, as you called it, the clean baseload power and energy, and looking across the U.S. when we look at projects at scale, how do you see CCS fitting into that?
As we mentioned at the start here, the technology is effectively proven. And so what's been required to see it continue to scale is going to be commercial offtake that that's calling for. And there's many ways to think about that, right? There's the regulatory and incentive programs that we talked about that already exist, and those are spurring development of projects in some of those core geographies. But when we think about the ability to take a gas power plant and take that carbon intensity of it and significantly reduce it, such that you now have effectively baseload, low carbon intensity power, being able to then provide that to data centers, hyperscalers, and so on that are really demanding this power in ever increasing amounts, we really think that's an exciting opportunity for the sector and can build on the fact that there's a number of these sequestration as well as transportation systems that have been developed or in the process of being developed across the U.S. But then you can couple that by installing this capture systems onto existing or greenfield gas power plants. And we think overall that's a very compelling opportunity to deploy large-scale capital and deliver a product that is highly valuable to off-takers.
And given all these headlines with hyperscalers, like you mentioned, and power generation, do you feel like there's something about CCS that people aren't talking about or you feel like is getting lost or could be an important thing looking forward that we're overlooking?
There is potential to develop from a network effect, if you will, the existing investment into things like sequestration hubs, as well as the infrastructure to support those, and then being able to further build those out and scale them out, even at a cheaper cost than initially they would have needed to get started. And what I mean by that is bringing scale to, say, a carbon sequestration hub or a pipeline system helps drive the unit costs down. I think we'll continue to see that build out on some of the existing infrastructure and some of these projects that have already taken shape, and we'll continue to see hubs that will continue to develop and benefit from that existing investment. And we could start to see potentially be something that was initially developed as a carbon sequestration hub for, say, industrial purposes or gas plant processing, that could in turn become a hub where, say, emissions from natural gas power generation could be directed to. And so definitely think that that capacity to help accelerate development and timelines in this sector is something to be aware of.
I think we'll definitely keep our eyes open going into 2026 and beyond. Thank you, Craig, for joining us and taking us through the current status of the CCS space.
Thanks, Natalie. Really appreciate you having me on the call.
And thank you for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.